Thousands of people are heading overseas to seek treatments for rare and terminal conditions. How do we balance the needs of these desperately sick individuals with the need for rigorous evidence-based medicine? How do we reach that balance without treading on the power of hope? Hi, welcome to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the Center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. Chris Scott joins us. He is the director of the Stanford Program on Stem Cells in Society. He and Charles Murdoch of the Stanford University Center for Law and the Biosciences penned an article in the May 2010 issue of the American Journal of Bioethics entitled Stem Cell Tourism and the Power of Hope. Chris, you begin the article with a story on Richard, a student in your class with a rare condition who sought stem cell treatment in China. How does his story reflect on the issues you explore in this edition of AJOP?
Richard had a very interesting story. He was a graduate student here at Stanford University, decided to take a course in stem cell biology. His training is as a engineer, I believe. And Richard had just come back from a treatment for his disorder in China. And so my first impulse was to ask Richard to give a lecture to the class about his experiences in China. And he quickly agreed to do that. And I have to say, of the many years I've been teaching, it was one of the most riveting hours of discussion I've ever seen.
And what he brought up, I guess, was somewhat of the microcosm of some of the things you're talking about here, the cultural tensions between his needs as an ill patient and the need for evidence-based medicine. And so there's a conflict there.
Yes. One of the things that he explored in his discussion with us was how, as a sick person with a disease that was currently untreatable, he needed to make decisions about his own health. And these decisions were weighed very carefully by him, his family, his medical doctors, and other people that he talked to. And his choices really reflected some of the topics we hit on in the article about sick individuals and their need to respect their family's wishes, their own wishes for getting better, and to try the best they can to get treatment. So Richard's research, if we could call it that, spanned many different areas. He talked with other patients like himself that had the disease. He talked with people that had returned from clinics in other countries and asked how they had fared. He has a young son about going. This was not going to be a cheap sort of thing for him. It was in the tens of thousands of dollars. And at the end, he decided that because he had the resources and because he wanted to get better, that he would travel to China to get a stem cell treatment, which was injected into his spinal column using what we think, we're not sure, but what we think were umbilical cord blood stem cells. And so he relayed his experience to the class, and it was very interesting because he knows about clinical trials. He knows about the need for evidence-based medicine, yet his decision was to forego the regular clinical trial, or at least forgo waiting for something that he could enroll in, and went to China instead.
And in the end, the treatment did not have a benefit for him, correct?
Yeah, correct. It also did not have a harm for him, and that's one of the issues we bring up in the paper. In the absence of benefit, in the absence of harm, what do we do as doctors and as ethicists to advise patients who are considering these sorts of treatments? And we play a little bit of a devil's advocate in the article by saying that when the community of science and bioethics doesn't know exactly what's going on in other countries, when we ourselves are lacking data, just as patients are lacking data, is it fair or is it the right thing to do to simply condemn all trials in all locations that aren't part of the gold standard clinical trials regime? And we pose this as a thought experiment, mainly because in terms of practical ethics, what do we do when someone comes into our offices and says, you know, I'm sick, someone like Richard, I'm sick, I have this set of information in front of me, what would you do? Can you give me some advice? So we explored those issues of how you might communicate with patients who are looking to travel for unauthorized or unapproved stem cell injections.
It seems like a delicate balance that we're trying to achieve here. You have an individual who is trying to maintain some level of hope that his condition might be treated in some way, but then going overseas to a clinic where they may be having some ethical problems of their own. That's a balance that's sometimes hard to achieve, isn't it?
It is, and it's, I think, one of the duties, if you want to call it that, to talking to patients about what they might do is to be quite frank with them about how clinics in unregulated or maybe underregulated regimes don't have the standards that we would like to see, at least here in the Western world, the United States and Western countries, and that they enter into those sorts of procedures at their own risk or at a risk, and that when you don't have information about the safety of the cells, just to take one example, whether the cells might proliferate and cause cancer, that's one of the big worries for cells derived from embryonic stem cells. Another significant worry and risk is contamination. When these procedures are blinded to the patient and to the community of science because there have been no publications on them, it's very difficult to understand what the risks might be. So I think the one good thing to do is to make sure, as a patient, you understand all of the risks that you might take by having a transplant in another country, and that those risks might be substantial. They could make your condition worse, or in the most horrifying case, kill you. So that discussion, I think, is an important one to have with patients who are looking for advice about what to do with stem cells.
Well, Chris, what I hear you say a little bit, though, too, is that maybe we should open a window on some of these practices offshore in the event that we might be able to gain something of clinical value. Do I hear you correctly on that?
Yes, you do. I think there are two places we can go for that kind of information. And in our anecdote in the article, we mentioned something that Richard did. And before he went to a neurosurgeon, his own neurosurgeon, and asked that person to measure him, that neuroscientist to measure him in terms of his motor abilities before he went. And then he asked the person to do a follow-up on his abilities once he came back, and then at intervals after 3 months, 6 month intervals afterwards. So in essence, he was designing, if you want to call it that, a clinical trial with himself as the only subject. And so one of our suggestions in this thought experiment is to engage patients more fully, for those patients that are committed to going to offshore trials of which we know nothing about, and try to observe these patients both before they go and after they, in observational studies, to get information that we otherwise would not have. So that's one suggestion that we have. That suggestion comes with a very, very important caveat, however, and that's that if patients are aware that, let's say, a big research center in the United States is actually undertaking these observational trials of procedures, then it could be construed as some sort of implied endorsement of those perhaps ethically fraught trials in other countries. And that's a very important thing to keep in mind and to consider using this kind of an idea for looking at patients and trying to get information. The whole idea behind a study like this would be to try to get our hands on, for example, which clinics are providing what kinds of cells and what methods are being used, and whether or not these procedures may be providing some benefit, and importantly, whether they are providing some harm, and also, I would say just as importantly, whether they provide no benefit and no harm. So even that kind of a result is a very, very important piece of information to have. So that's one thing. The second thing think we would hint at is trying to get more information is to more fully engage the recruiting system that seems to be evolving over social networking. And that is, in this case, in this particular case, individuals are talking to each other about procedures that they've had in other places, and that information is being used to trigger a yes or no decision to go to a clinic. So those social networking sites, blogs, patient advocate sites, loose affiliations of individuals with one disease or another are very, very powerful tools for researchers, we argue, and that if we can figure out a way of partnering with these organizations and gathering information from patients who travel, that information in turn can be used and then can provide better information to individuals, caregivers, and their families who might be considering what could be considered fairly risky transplants for certain conditions.
I enjoyed one of the subtitles of your article, Hope is the Snake That Eats Itself.
Yeah.
It was around the idea that the scientific community somewhat was responsible for this environment with perhaps an overselling of the benefits of stem cell treatments.
Yeah, I would broaden actually that and to say that anyone who was interested and excited in stem cells and regenerative medicine, not just the scientists, but politicians, ethicists, I put myself in that category too. This is a fabulous area of medicine. I've been in the sciences for 30 years. I've never seen anything so powerful. But we need to measure our hope and expectations for the research and for the diseases they may treat and cure, and balance that with the history of science. Gene therapy, gene transfer, has been very slow in coming, 20, 25 years. Other sorts of treatments, similar time frames and even longer. So it's important, I think, for people who are involved in the research and involved in studying the research and promoting stem cells as a bona fide area of science that can be a medicine someday to take it conservatively, and to describe the treatments and the possibilities conservatively. Otherwise, it becomes the hope that we have as scientists and as ethicists will become the hope that will come back and bite us.
Christopher Thomas Scott is the director of the Stanford Program on Stem Cells in Society. He and Charles Burdock of the Stanford University Center for Law and the Biosciences wrote an article in the May 2010 issue of the American Journal of Bioethics entitled Stem Cell Tourism and the Power of Hope. For more information, visit bioethics.net. That's bioethics.net. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.